Hello, everybody. I'm Dwayne Mancini, and welcome to another episode of the Project MedTech Podcast. If you need anything from us or would like to suggest a future guest, you can email us at info@projectmedtech.com. If you enjoy this podcast, please subscribe and leave a review. For more information on Project MedTech, our events we host, our consulting and advisory services, and to sign up for our monthly newsletter, visit our website, www.projectmedtech.com, and follow us on LinkedIn. If you're enjoying this content, don't forget to check out our other podcasts by searching MedTech Money on your favorite podcast platform or by heading to our website. MedTech Money is an interview-style podcast focused on demystifying raising and investing capital for MedTech companies. This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Galen Data. Galen Data is an FDA-compliant cloud for medical device manufacturers. The Galen Cloud provides a configurable platform for device-to-cloud connectivity that is compliant to FDA, HIPAA, and CE mark standards. The company is ISO 13485 certified, and the product on AWS is HITRUST certified as well. Founded by seasoned medical device professionals, the company's goal is to make medical device cloud connectivity available to all at a fraction of the cost while shaving months off the development timeline. Galen Data allows medical device companies to stay medical device companies and not become IT companies. In this episode, our guests Brian Dunn and Larry Schneider at General Digital and I discuss the similarities between aviation and medical devices, the FAA versus FDA, the 110-100 rule, verification and validation of software, and so much more. So without further ado, my discussion with Brian Dunn and Larry Schneider.
Medical innovation starts with medical discussion. Talking about the future and what comes next with Project MedTech.
And just like that, we're live. Brian and Larry, welcome to the podcast.
Wow, thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon.
Yeah, yeah. So, Brian, I just realized this right before we hopped on. This is actually your second appearance on the podcast. You do make a cameo appearance in the episode with Erica Chung. I forgot that you had asked a question there, and that's actually we got connected. And that was my first live podcast that we had put up here. So welcome back to the podcast again.
Well, thank you very much, Dwayne. I'll tell you, you ran that event at that trade show. It was a lot of... It was a great value to me personally, and I think to the audience. And I enjoyed it. And I did, that is true. I did go back and I shared that link with our team and said, hey, boss man asked a question, throw darts at me. It's great.
No, I appreciate it. So Brian and Larry, I'll flip it over to both of you. Before we dive into the company you all are representing as well, just brief intros into yourselves and then also General Digital.
Sure. Look, first of all, thank you very much for having us on the podcast. I think what you're doing is important. You know, there's a lot of information out there, and it is great to have these vehicles to come on as a guest. Thank you. But as a listener, it is these are great things. So my name is Brian Dunn. I'm the Vice President for Business Development for General Digital Corporation. I also, in part of that role, I also take care of the software services that we have in the company. And joining me with me is one of our senior directors of sales, Larry Schneider. I'll let you introduce yourself.
You did a great job. Thank you. Larry Schneider, Director of Software Sales and Services here. And we've been at this for how many years now?
Well, the company is almost 50 years old. It's a small privately held company. But personally, the two of us have interesting backgrounds to come to a med device podcast talking about software. And I will just get this out right in the front. Neither one of us are software guys.
Right.
So from an executive leadership standpoint, you're going to get, you know, I will not go geeky into the weeds, which is probably good for the audience, but also keeps me out of trouble if I'm saying something that the basic coder will say, that guy doesn't know what he's talking about. Because I don't code. Neither of us code. It's kind of funny. Yeah. My background came out of U.S. Army. I was a pilot, CH-47 Chinook helicopter pilot. Spent a number of years in the service, did some really wonderful, fun, honorable service, that great part of my life. And I got out and I've been in and out of various types of manufacturing capabilities for the aerospace and defense world, you know, from the top tier the Boeings of the world down through other large global enterprises, kind of working my way down the supply chain here to the smaller component manufacturer, still part of the big deal. But I'm a non-software person, but I am very much aerospace and defense. And so I come from a place of understanding the importance of safety critical software because it controls the things you do, and that lives are riding on the end product. So that's my perspective from the big picture. And Larry comes not from the military, but from a med device world. So you actually have some very interesting background for this.
Yeah, so I have decades of experience with some large manufacturers and medical device. I've spent decades in the operating room, you know, teaching and instructing and marketing technologies for Medtronic, Boston Scientific, Pfizer when they own medical device technologies. So I have a very different perspective, but the similarities between the software requirements in the defense industry and avionics industry are very strict, as they are with the FDA requirements. So we bring a different viewpoint of industry to the marketplace here, but the applications are very parallel, and that's how our software services company evolved from working with FAA requirements and then along the way to FDA requirements. Yep. So that's how we are serving both industries.
So two non-software people proselytizing good software habits. Great. Now, I joke all the time because we have not invited our engineering director here. He's off doing actual work while the two of us are marketing things. We are a privately held company, an engineering company, and we have folks on staff that have done this work for multiple decades. I mean, they were the first to really start doing some of the aerospace level certified software testing way back, you know, 30 or more years ago. So I'm being joking around about how we're not software folks, but thank God we actually have a large staff of engineers who do this all the time and do it really well. So, but we are a small private held company in Connecticut with 49 years in the market, very, very well managed and run company. And we've got a staff of 24 people on the software side of the business. And then, a larger number of folks. We produce a lot of hardware for the aerospace and defense. So human machine interface hardware, ruggedized displays, that sort of thing on the hardware side. And on the software side, we're a unique business to have those two halves. What's great is that a lot of times our software folks will end up doing the embedded systems work for our hardware customers. Right. And so we have a nice way to go to market with the whole package. I'm talking about that today, but just from what the medical device thinking about it. So if I can say, you know, we've got 49 years in business, and for the last 20 plus 25 years or so, maybe even 30, it depends on how you count it. We have been doing a lot of this software testing for FAA certified pieces of, you know, hardware. Like, the best example I'll give you is there are so many small accessory boxes that hang on a jet engine. They control various functions of said jet engine, like a FADEC, a full authority digital engine control. All of that software has to be independently verified and validated before it gets certified to get onto the jet engine. And then the FAA says you can't fly it without this documentation. And so for decades, we have been doing the documentation for that subcomponent of the engine. Does that make sense? And after a number of aircraft, and we've been doing it for a long time, about 5 or 6 years ago, we got approached by a medical company. Our first medical company said, hey, we got this problem. We can't verify our software. We're looking for some help, and you have a very good reputation. Can you take a look? Absolutely. Describe your problems, you know, what's it look like? So from that one customer, multiple years and some expanded staff because it got pretty big. And we took class 3 medical device, you know, it plugs into a human and it needs to work right the first time and every time, and took them through the whole process and done that a couple of times with different startups, through prototype phasings and everything like that. So it transfers from the aviation group to the medical group. And I think that's really what got me interested in this topic in the first place at the Erica Chung event. That was the basis of the question, was saying, culturally, in medical device startup community, do people talk about this like we do in the aviation side because of the history of the requirements to do independent verification and validation of your service?
Yeah, I remember when you asked the question, you know, sometimes you get questions and you're like, oh, that's a bad question, or that doesn't make any sense. But when you asked your question, it was like, and you started with aviation industry, I'm like, okay, like right away, I'm like, where's he going?
Why is this guy here? He's in the wrong building.
He's lost. No. And then you got to your point and I'm like, hey, I need to talk to this guy afterwards because this is really, really interesting. And so that was, I just thought it was a fascinating story of aviation to device. Now, I will say, you know, medical device is a conservative industry, right? And so generally, you know, as they, and it's also regulated by the FDA. So as things change, it is a little bit slower and they have to adjust to how, you know, these new technologies that are coming out. And so, but with relation to software and more specifically verification and validation, you know, I think that sometimes the FDA does look to the industry to educate as well. And so there is, you know, a piece of that, that the industry owes to the FDA essentially of saying, hey, this is how we should actually do some of these things. It's kind of a little bit of both. You have to look at it both ways. So I'm interested to learn a little bit more about the verification validation piece. But where I originally was going with that is this is a new space for medical device. And you know, I used to deal with it all the time with companies when I was in the CRO world, which is clinical research organization. And so we would do these clinical trials and we'd have companies come to us. And they would say, hey, we want to do a trial overseas. And I go, okay, great. So why do you want to do that? And every once in a while you'd get someone who would answer and we would stop working with them right away because they were just trying to go to a place where they can get first in human a lot sooner than they can in a more developed country. And to me, that's a really poor reason, right? Because if you're in this industry, you're generally in this industry to save lives and make a difference for humanity as a whole. And so to lay the groundwork for this conversation, you know, my thought process is you want to put the best quality product out on the market that's going to save lives. And if you wouldn't put this in a family member, that's probably a pretty good barometer for maybe you're not doing enough to prove its quality, right? So with that in mind, keeping that in mind, you want to put the best possible product out there. Explain to me the fundamentals of independent, right? Independent verification and validation.
So I love how you say, like, you're going to put this in somebody, right? This is a big deal. It is.
Yeah.
You know, we talked a little bit about it after the show, you know, and when I came home and I described to the engineer staff, hey, this is what interactions I had with some really cool people at this show. And one of the things came up about cultural and requirements of testing. And we always use the example of an airplane. You got to do it right. You got to design it correctly and then prove it was designed correctly. Verification and validation. Because 300 people might be flying in at any given time, and that's going to be a really terrible tragedy if something happens. And we can talk later on in the podcast about some events that, you know, software caused crashes, right? And our director of engineering, Stuart, looked at me and goes, well, you know, it's funny. He's like, I know you always say, Brian, that like one person at a time might perish from this device. But if there are 5 million people with this device attached to them and something changes with the software or it's not working, like that could be just or even more catastrophic at the same time. You know, and so it's very important to think of it that way. So with that kind of big picture, IVNV is the term of art for independent verification and validation. So independent means what? Usually it means that the person who wrote the code doesn't test the code. Simple as that. You're like, I am going to go write me a term paper and I'm going to read it 10 times and I'm going to hand it to my dad and say, hey, dad, I got to turn this in for high school. And your parent reads it over and says, well, there's 4 misspellings and you missed all these commas and all this stuff. And you're like, but I read this 10 times. I know this is right. Like, yeah, because you just, and we've all done it. I've looked at this a million times and your brain fills in the gaps. The same thing can happen with as you're writing code. You know, let somebody check it, but you didn't write it.
Yeah.
It's basic, mm-hmm. The independence. So what does that mean? It means we are an independent company and we are fully independent of you. We do not have the same sort of internal pressures that your leadership, your management, your shareholders might have. You're going to pay us and here's a fee and we work by the hour, for instance, in our it could be a, give me a blank, not a blank check. Give me a set fee and I'll do all this work in a firm fixed price or just, you know, whatever. I'm just going to take my 100 hours and I'm paying by the hour. But I'm outside your organization, right? So that's independent. Now you can, by the legal term, have an independent independent department in your own company, but it needs to fit certain qualities of like it's fully staffed all the time. It has a different line of communication funding. And funding.
Right.
So like it's a little more difficult and it gets a little nuanced and it gets a little gray. We exist specifically to be black and white. I'm not your company. And yes, you're paying me for service, but I'm going to hand you a document and there's an air gap between the person doing the writing and doing the testing. Independent.
So this is meant to ensure objectivity independently of your dreams and wishes of your company and your technology. We're just looking at this as a piece of software. And does it sink or swim? Does it pass or fail?
Right. And it gets into the V and the V part of this, right? So it is with these requirements that are written to describe the process by which, you know, something's happening with this code. You know, you're going to hear me say requirements a lot, because without requirements, you can't verify that you built the right code. And you can't validate that the code you've written meets the requirements that you've been given. So we're external to you. You're going to give us your requirements that are the stated requirements that you're going to then turn into the FDA and say, hey, FDA, here are the requirements that we designed for our device, whether it's a software as a medical device or a device that does whatever it is and the embedded software. Here are our stated requirements. Here are the results of an independent investigation that line by line by line by line, we can trace every single thing that the code does back to this validated requirement. And it's packaged nicely for you. And the regulator says, oh, I can follow this. I see. Thou shalt do this software. And then I've got all of the mathematical ways that shall could be executed. And it runs through the process and every one of them is operating as intended. You know, we can get into the technicals of what that means a little bit more, but as a big picture, independently, I can tell you that you wrote the right software and that the software you wrote was correctly done, independently verified and validated.
Yeah. Yeah. No. And so, you know, this is, I like the independent piece of this, right? Because the concern is that, you know, we have this for a standard medical device, you essentially have some level of this, right? You go through animal testing, you go through biocompatibility testing. Those are all done at an independent lab that says, hey, the functionality of your product doesn't work. Mm. The safety of your materials you're using, they're not safe, right? Those are what those tests there are there to do. Now, this is purely an opinion of mine. Because we don't have a lot of clinical feedback requirements within the US, and Europe is pretty controversial right now for going through the whole MDR update, mm-hmm. and requiring clinical feedback, you know, 80% of medical devices on the market, or, you know, somewhere around that number, don't require any kind of post-market clinical follow-up, right? And yep. So technically the device industry is missing a little bit of that validation, because they're not continuing to collect that clinical information to say, hey, what we you know, what we said was going to happen is still happening. Now, I'm exaggerating. There are checks and balances there, but this is just a really interesting piece for software as a medical device, because it is a really new area. But real quick, before we move into that, the independent piece, this is important for especially med tech startup companies, because you want to get people's opinions that don't have necessarily a horse in the race, right? They're there to provide you when you're in that startup world and you're iterating your product and you're building this, it becomes your baby. And that just kind of blinds you to maybe some of the things, like you just said, where you kind of overlook, you put your own words in. Yep. I mean, and it might not say exactly what you're saying. So the independent piece is just so valuable. Why wouldn't you do it on the product side? Wouldn't? Right? We encourage all of our startups to, hey, you know, get some advisors that can provide you, that maybe aren't entirely like tied into everything, that can provide you feedback here and there and say, hey, you guys have really went down a path that mm-hmm. doesn't make a lot of sense, right? And so that's where I see a lot of this value you're kind of describing here with your product. And I don't write code, and I never have, but it seems pretty.
So you make me think of two things, Duane. I mean, first, we can get into this if you like, but, you know, fraud. It's really hard to fraudulently pawn something off as working if an independent house has proven that it, you're like, look, don't trust my word for it. Trust this third party who has taken a set of requirements and done 100% like line by line code coverage that this software does exactly what it says. And if the software does what it says, it's controlling the device, and now the device is doing that. It provides a level of authenticity and what's the word I'm looking for? Like, confidence. Yes. Where when you're approaching the regulator, you say, don't take my word for it. Here is this, you know, giant stack of validated software results from this third party that at least, you know, when the FDA requires this low level traceability, you're going to have it. And you probably don't have the expertise to do it yourself as thoroughly as someone that's their job, you know, testing. So from a fraud standpoint, that's that. But just also from a standpoint of, you're going to make better code when better, like, let me put it this way. Better code is testable code, right? If you've got horrible requirements for what your device's code is supposed to do, you're not going to be able to test that easily. And working with a house, any house, not doesn't have to be us, but just somebody who's used to this process of, one of the things we'll do, multiple devices have come to us and said, hey, can you test this code? And we'd say, all right, what are your requirements? Requirements? We didn't write any requirements. We just wrote it so it worked. It just does this thing. We have a black box that, you know, inputs magic and outputs. We'll define your magic. And so we'll end up working with this startup or with this manufacturer to clearly, legibly, and logically lay out all the requirements, all of the shall statements, all of the things that they absolutely have to have. And in multiple times, we'll find problems with the operation of the hardware of the business or of the device that they never even thought about.
So to Brian's point, there's a rule in the industry, and it's the 1-10-100 rule. So if you take care of setting up the requirements, writing the software according to the specifications, you know, 13485, 62304 for medical software, you do it right the first time, it's going to cost you a dollar. If you come to us with this already designed and hand it to us and say, can you get this, help us get this FDA approved, make sure our software is okay, and we find problems with it, now you've just 10x'd your cost to make sure that this software is operating to your requirements and the way it needs to in order to pass FDA scrutiny.
God forbid you come here after certification and you're on the field and you have a problem. Now we're talking 100. So that's the 1-10-100, you know, one time,
I love that.
100 times in terms of the cost and time and in dollars to fix a problem. You fix it before you ever write the requirement. That's easy, man.
And that was the topic where you two were introduced in Boston, talking about that company, Theranos.
Well, Theranos, yeah.
Yeah.
That cost was probably 1,000x.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, and I want to talk a little bit about Theranos as well, and kind of the theory around that. But to your point, right? So there's independent verification and validation for certain products, you know, going to the FDA. And I said, you know, at a whole, the medical device space, it's almost like the market dictates you to have some of that follow-up data into, like you just said, like you were using an example that, hey, it's been independently validated. You could take that not only to the FDA, but let's really, I mean, the FDA is a checkbox, right? In terms of value for a startup, but selling to the hospital system is what the gold standard is. And so if you could take that to a hospital IT department and say, look, it's been validated independently of us, right? So there is some safety measures there. That's really important, because I can tell you, because I've been in one, we've done value analysis committee meetings, which is really what dictates a hospital system approving a product for purchase. And I could tell you, for most medical devices, there might be 8, 9, 10 people in the room at most. It's not that bad. We walked in with the software. There were 24 people on that meeting. All these people from the IT department, it's a big deal in a hospital system. You are selling a new product to the most conservative industry.
Yeah.
Well, I take that back. One of the most conservative industries in the world, which is healthcare. And so not only does it make sense from a sales process, but you also have to realize that, so there's setting yourself apart from your competition and putting the best possible product out there. But another reason for it is, like, if you just take product code LLZ for the FDA, it is a system image processing radiological device. There are 2,315 approved devices through LLZ, most of which have come in the last like 5 years or so. So that's 2,000 products. You think all those are commercially successful? How do you set yourself apart when you walk in and you know, sell that product to the company? And so I look at this as it's putting your best product out there. It's also putting your best foot forward for your company and being commercially successful. It's not just regulations. People look at this as if it's like a regulation type of thing, and that's
more than that.
In my eyes, it's way more than that. It's more than just regulation.
You know,
but I good.
I was just like, we've had conversations with startups over the last couple of years, and we kind of demonstrated to them, hey, I know you're at this point where you can't necessarily, like, you don't have the budget to go out and do a full top to bottom, but like, let's help you start here. And I'm willing to bet you took a result of, we have this code that's testable and we're going to be able to prove that it works. And you take that to your investors, or you're looking for investments. If I went to an investor with validated code versus unvalidated code, one of those two things sounds awesome.
Yeah, it's all about your value inflection points when you're dealing with those investors. And see, this is the whole point of why I wanted to talk about this, right? Is because I don't want to talk about verification, validation, and the ins and outs of how to do it. I want to talk about how does this fit into the company's strategy and when you should be thinking of that. And so far, I think it makes a lot of sense. The 110-100 rule, I love that. And we'll just call it the 110-100 and the 1,000 rule for the therapist case. Yeah. But Larry, curious on, you know, your experience in the medical device space. I mean, when you've been around a lot of products, I've been around a lot of products, and I see a lot fail when they think that getting to commercialization as fast as possible is like the best thing to do, because that's not always true, right? Because we know how hard commercialization is. So in your experience, I mean, were most of those products, did they take their time kind of building, iterating, making sure that when they went there, it was verified and validated and kind of ready to go?
Absolutely. You're mitigating risk, right? And just as in the FAA, you know, in aerospace industry, you can't afford to have risk at all. In the medical arena, the minute you have a problem, it gets reported to the FDA. You cannot afford to have risk, and you will do everything in your power to make sure that you've covered your bases. You've done everything according to, you know, the requirements that Brian's term, you know, that these requirements are there for very specific reasons so that you are mitigating any downside. You want to minimize any risk whatsoever and make sure that when this medical device, you know, is in the surgeon's hands in the OR, it's performing exactly the way it was designed with all the safety measures built into it, acting exactly the way they're meant to. So
you've been in those rooms where something didn't work.
I've been there when they have not worked. Yeah. Correct. So, yeah. Things happen, and there's always a lot of variables, of course, but you don't want it to be the technology itself that's causing that problem.
You know, right? And speaking of not working, you know, obviously we're not mentioning customer names here purposefully, but we have an example where a customer was using a device that we had validated and it wasn't working the way they wanted it to work. And they're like complaining about the software. And we're like, hey guys, sure. What's the error? Show it to us. And we'll root cause the problem. Maybe there's a bug. Maybe there's something. And it turns out that the customer was using this device, quote unquote, off label, right? It was never designed to operate in the manner they were using.
Right.
And the manufacturer was like, oh, thank God. You know, it's like, so we could just point to them and say, this device works perfectly, given the requirements set into law by what you submitted in your 510K. Everything works. Like, it's 100% validated. I can prove it. You were acting outside of the requirements. It was never designed to do it this way.
Yeah.
So the manufacturer's off the hook. The customer's doing something off label. Now we can fix that and we can change it so it'll work that way, but you have to develop a requirement. Hallelujah, we have a requirement. Now you have software, we can revalidate it, and guess what? You have a happy customer. But that gut-clenching fear of, oh my God, our device doesn't work. It's like, no. I have all the documentation you need to prove it works just exactly as designed.
Yeah. Yep. I love that. Okay, so we've kind of touched on it a little bit, but I kind of want to round it out. Software as a medical device is a new area to the FDA, to the area of medicine in general, right? We kind of talked about selling into a hospital and what that independent verification validation could do, that kind of stamp. With the FDA, you know, their whole mission is that this is a safe and effective product, right? And so I think sometimes the idea would be, well, hey, maybe this is new. We can help educate what we think they need and we'll get away with less than maybe what's appropriate, right? Is that your understanding or my understanding, you know, my personal is that the FDA is going to be more conservative in that case because they don't really necessarily want to do that, but if they don't know, they don't know. So kind of walk me through that. I mean, if a company is going to the FDA, I mean, what should they expect?
Well, I'll make a comment and I'll toss some color over to Larry, but
yeah,
the FDA is still going to require the low level traceability for what your requirements say the code is supposed to do. That's not going to change. Right. So don't think, well, I can show you that it works just by running the system over and over again. Like that, there's a very important time and place for just systems testing or high level testing. Like, absolutely not poo-pooing that at all, but you're still going to have to do a line by line, low level code review and code unit test and all of that. So I don't see any difference in requirements from the regulatory body for medical device software as a medical device, as if it was a piece of hardware. In fact, I agree with you, and probably they should be fairly conservative, because man, like, you could do a lot of damage with some bad code, you know, and we have, you know, Larry, maybe you can, without, obviously we're not talking about the customers that are coming to us, but there are three people right now that are software as a medical device seeking guidance on verification and validation.
So if the software as a medical device is being used as a tool, right, a medical diagnostic tool that ensues in some sort of intervention, the criticality of that software is now elevated and is going to face greater scrutiny than if it was just merely monitoring something, on people have certain watches that they wear and it monitors basic vital signs, that sort of thing. That's just more of a latent monitoring of whatever is going on in your life today at this moment. But if you are utilizing a technology that requires you to inject a certain medicine or, you know, take a different precautionary measure, now that's a medical device. And that is going to face greater scrutiny from the FDA and how that software is validated, the documentation, you know, you can't mess around. So,
yeah, Larry, you bring up a great point. It kind of sparked an old memory when I was at a previous company. We were working with a product that was a closed loop system, and it was one of the first closed loop systems to go through the FDA, where it was taking a reading from the patient and then determining how much drug to inject, mm-hmm. more specifically in the anesthesia place, space, right? So we see this in diabetes and insulin, right? There's a couple closed loop systems out there, but this was an anesthesia that would said, hey, it'll keep your, it essentially was healthier for the patient. But, you know, to your point, like as the FDA, you're obviously worried, but as that manufacturer of that product, I mean, you've got to feel a pretty big sense of nerves. And to have the code validated, so you know, hey, we're not going to screw up and dump too much drug into the patient. It's crazy, but that's where the industry is going is these, you know, closed loop systems, because they can be effective. It just carries risk.
Absolutely, absolutely right. So, you know, we've taken a look at different data sets, and you know, the most recent ones that show medical device technology failures, I don't know, it was maybe 30 or 40% of the failures were due to software.
Yep. Other medical device recall type, whoops, something broke.
Yeah.
Failure in the field, so, let's recall it.
So, you know, it just begs the question, does there need to be greater scrutiny? You know, why do these occur? How are they occurring? How critical are they? Is there something that we can do earlier in the process to make sure that these requirements are met, that the guidelines are followed, that the, you know, every safety measure, you know, I'm sure that everything is not foreseeable when it gets involved with the human being and the human body and so forth, but it bears greater scrutiny and the ability to do IV&V on these technologies is ever so more important.
So here's a piece of color on that. And like, it kind of gets back to like, you're a software startup, you're a medical device startup, and why is this important? And I'm trying to keep with the you know, the leadership, the management, the founding elements, why this is important. If you're thinking about, you know, saving money by getting to the code right away, like, great, go ahead and write the code. If there's a problem, it's 10 times as expensive. We've talked about the 1, 10, 100 rule. And if you get it past this, okay. So why is the validation and the verification process really important? So think about the requirement to have 100% code coverage. That kind of line, coverage, is the terms of art to say, like, well, we've evaluated this code and we can trace its requirements. So 100% code coverage. So really the purpose, as you're thinking about your device that you're building up, is what, under what conditions could this code, you know, be called upon to act, right? And it gets back to the requirements. How is this going to work? How could this work? And part of a really good tester's toolkit, and it's a little different than just the dude or the dudette writing the code, is to come up with these test cases, to, you know, mathematically come up with all the various ways to determine the impact on these code routines, right? And to document, like, there's 1,000 ways this could work. And then to be able to run simulations for those 1,000 times that, yep, of all of the circumstances by which this code could interact with the machine or the outside, I can trace every one of those mathematically possible ways back to a requirement, right? And I validated that all of the ways this could work has been thought about in the requirements. If there's no requirement, you can't test it. But if you, you know, circling back to, like, the earlier you get your requirements set and working with an independent house to develop your requirements document, we've done that multiple times where a company has come and said, we don't have a requirements document. All right, we'll set our testers, and it's going to take a lot of hours, but we'll sit with you and build the document with you. We will take your code and reverse engineer a requirements document that says the code apparently does this. Let's then validate this requirements with you, you know, then we can go back and test your documents and test your code. So it's this cyclical way in the beginning that saves money, and then, you know, lots of money after you've built your device. But, like, it is what it is. But just this thought process of, this is so important because eventually you're gonna have to have these low level requirements traced. Get it done early. Be a part of the system early. That's kind of like, that's the drum. You know, you're seeing me, you can't see me because I'm on a verbal podcast, but I'm like beating the drum here on my desk to say, like, requirements early, just better for you.
Yeah. I think ending it here is the best possible way. I really don't want to even talk about Theranos because, it's such a drain and such a black eye on the industry. Yeah. But you're 100% right. There's a lot of things that went wrong in that company's lifespan, but too much to get into. But I love this. I've learned so much about verification, validation, and more importantly, like, from my standpoint, because I do advise a lot of startup companies, I'm not even so worried about how to do this. I'm more worried about how this fits in, when it fits in, when you get involved, and the importance of, you know, again, I think a lot of people look at it as, oh, it's so that I can get FDA clearance, right? Or FDA approval. It's not. That's part of it for sure. Part of it. But it's also commercial, setting yourself apart. It's about putting a good quality product out there, right, and being able to sleep at night. So I can't thank you both enough. I think this was fantastic. I certainly learned a lot. I hope our listeners did. I will include Brian and Larry's LinkedIn in the show notes. I'll include General Digital's website as well. Brian, Larry, hang on for one more minute. We'll chat offline real quick, but yep. Thanks so much for doing this.
It's my pleasure. Yeah. I enjoyed it thoroughly. So thanks for inviting us.
We appreciate it. Thank you, Dwayne.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe and leave a review. If you need anything from the podcast, you can always contact us at info@projectmedtech.com. Thanks for listening and have a great day.